มวยไทยคือชีวิต
From our studios in New York City and Miami, Florida You are listening to The Striking Corner With Eric Rivera and Vinny Scotto Your source for Muay Thai and kickboxing news worldwide
Yo, 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 what's going on, everybody? This is Eric Rivera from the Striking Corner Podcast, and you can catch me on Instagram at @EricRivera_TSC. And with me, as always, is my good friend, Vinny Scotto. What's up, man?
What's up, man? How you guys doing today? You can follow me on Instagram at Vinny Scotto. And yeah, that's pretty much it.
All right, man. So what's been going on? Everything good?
Everything is good. Grand, yeah. Wonderful, and great.
Yeah, so I just been, we're going to get started here real quick on the podcast. A little bit tired today. Just been playing a lot with my son, his third birthday. And it's, trust me, I'll tell you guys right now, if you don't have kids, when you have kids and you go to like petting zoos and all day spend, you know, playing at like Thunderdome and these other ball pools
Welcome
or whatever.
Welcome to the Thunderdome, bitch.
These things are like little maniacs running around on these bounce houses
a movie.
Yeah, I know. Where was that from? Thunderdome? Welcome to Thunderdome, bitch.
I think it was Dane Cook.
Yeah, it sounds like Dane Cook. Yeah. I think that was Employee of the Month. Maybe Employee of the Month.
No, I think it was Waiting.
Really?
He was the chef.
Oh, yeah? Oh, yeah, the chef. When the new guy gets introduced to the chef, and he's the chef. I think he says that to him. All right, guys. So we won't bother you with too much chit-chatter here. But anyway, just wanted to let you guys know. So really today we have I'm really happy to have this guest on. I name-dropped him a lot sometimes on the podcast, and he actually reached out to us because one of his students told him, hey, you're listening to Striking Corner, which is great because that means people are listening to us. So he reached out to us and said if we wanted to have him on, and it's pretty awesome because he's a guy that I actually, one of the guys that got me into fighting back in the day, one of the first fighters I saw live and in person. And this is back in the days of when Vinny and I, as we have explained, we used to do Sandshell along with the likes of guys like Asa Tenpao and some other well-known fighters. And he is also started off in Sandshell and then ended up, because of the way the sport moved into Muay Thai and MMA. He is none other than Rudy Ott. He is the one of the owners of Smash Gyms, the Smash Gyms in the Bay Area. Very accomplished Sandshell fighter and professional fighter, and then now coach. He retired from fighting and is now a full-time coach. A really great guy to talk to, and we have him here on the podcast. So we'll be right back with Rudy Ott.
But before we go into that, I just want to let you know, guys know we do have some shirts left in our store. This will be your absolute last chance to get any shirt involving the Striking Corner for $9.95. We have very limited inventory, so go pick one up before they're gone forever.
Yeah.
And then we are going to add a whole bunch more that are definitely not going to be $9.95. So you might want to get these now.
Yeah, yeah. Especially with some of the older, designs that we had there. There's the Champ Up and the Striking Corner by a Vowel T. Those will not be coming back.
You'll never see those again.
Yeah. So I would say, because those were, I mean, that was a limited run what we did with our friend Chris Romulo. So this is your last chance to get those and the Striking Corner by a Vowel T. Your last chance to get those for $9.95. We have a bunch of new great stuff coming. You guys are really going to love it. But like Vinny said, it will not be $9.95. And that's it. So we'll be right back with Rudy Ott.
The Striking Corner.
All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Striking Corner. As we had mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, we are here with somebody who I looked up to a lot when I was in my Sandshell days. In my Sandshell days before I got into Muay Thai, he was one of the first fighters I saw along with Kung Lee. And his name is Rudy Ott, Sandshell fighter, former Sandshell fighter, and now a well-known trainer at Smash Gym in the Bay Area. What is going on, Rudy? How's everything going, man?
How's it going, gentlemen?
We're good.
Happy to be with you guys today.
Glad to have you, man. Like we said, we were talking a little bit offline with Rudy here, but reminiscing some of the old days of San Chow. San Chow was our, I guess for a lot of us, kind of our way into combat sports. It was a different time, man. You know, so
it was a different era for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, talk to me a little bit about, I mean, that's just to go back a little bit, you know.
I don't think anybody's heard of San Chow in the past 10 years.
No, they haven't. You don't know what you're talking about if you say that.
No clue.
So, Rudy, tell us a little bit about what San Chow is then, so for those that don't know.
So, for those who don't know, it's essentially Chinese kickboxing, right? Mm-hmm. Very similar to Muay Thai to a certain degree, except, you know, the concentration and the clinches on throws and takedowns instead of knees and elbows, right? Then later they adopted knees. I'm not sure if elbows ever came in. So essentially the rules were punch, kick, and throw. Once it hits the ground, you get to stand back up. So all the fun parts of MMA. Just kidding. Just kidding, BJJ guys. I love you. But it was good for fighters who wanted to be well-rounded and that weren't that great at one particular thing. Like, there wasn't too great at boxing, wasn't too great at kicking, was okay at wrestling, but if I put them all together, I was actually a pretty good fighter.
And I love San Chow. I kind of miss it. I mean, one of my favorite parts was just like picking something up and dumping them on their head.
For sure, especially if they didn't, you know, if you're going against a kickboxer in those days or a Muay Thai fighter who wasn't really versed in defending takedown, they would go for a ride for sure.
Yeah, man. So it was
for you know, the guys that don't really know what San Chow is, the part of the takedowns is not necessarily like you know, like we have in Muay Thai where we have the dumps and the sweeps. You could actually do single legs, double legs, and judo throws, hip throws.
Yeah.
Greco-Roman wrestling, freestyle wrestling, judo, sambo were all great ends into that sport. You know, a lot of fighters, and that to a certain degree, MMA is what killed Sancho, right? Because the wrestlers that didn't want to just do straight stand up were like, oh, I have a chance in Sancho. You know, I'm able to negate this guy's striking by taking him down, I can be in a fight. You know, so once MMA really blew up, it was like, oh, I can take him down to the ground and stay on the ground.
Yeah.
Muay Thai took over, you know, the stand up portion.
For sure.
Yeah. I mean, sure. I remember, like, to, you know, kind of give you an idea, I remember the first time I jumped into San Chow, into Muay Thai, after doing San Chow for a couple of years, or like about 3-4 years maybe. And then I would like you to kind of tell us, you know, how you jumped from teaching San Chow and now teaching Muay Thai and what you're doing now with Smash. But for me, it was, you know, it was funny because I think San Chow has always had, you know, its issues with trying to get bigger. You know, it was bigger names. I mean, like I said, when growing up, I was about 18, 17 or 18 when I saw you, Kong. You guys were fighting at these international Chinese martial arts tournaments that they used to have. There was this guy named Nick Scrima. He used to run them. And I think he still does, but I don't know, you know, what's going on with those anymore. But so I used to fight there. And then
I won a gold medal in his tournament.
Yeah. Then he got a three straight knockouts pretty much in that tournament.
Nice.
So
that's the way to do it.
Yeah. But anyway, so what happened was then I remember the IKF that they do the World Classic. So for many of you guys that fought on the World Classic, there was one year that they were, or a couple of years that they said they were going to do San Chow. I jumped on with another friend of mine to say, okay, we're going to go into the San Chow division. Lo and behold, we got there. There was not enough people in the San Chow division. So they're like, you guys can either get your money back or you guys can go and do Muay Thai. So we were like, I was like young. I didn't know shit about Muay Thai. And I just said, you know what? You know, and I remember my coach was pretty cocky about it. And he just kind of said like, it's no big deal, man. You know, it's pretty much the same thing. Let's just go. Don't worry about it. I ended up fighting a guy from Mike Miles' gym, and he ended up busting my nose. And I was like, and I was just blown away by the style pretty much. And I got to sit down and watch Muay Thai. Like I watched the whole show, and then I was like, what is this? You know? And I think the thing with that was also there was gyms back in the day, and I don't think you did that, Rudy, but the gym that we came from was like a traditional Kung Fu gym. So you did like an ASA, who we all know, and we've had him on the podcast, also came from that, which was where you would do traditional Kung Fu forms and all that type of stuff.
And yep, Sanshou, Kalu, and then you would do Sanshou.
Yeah, and then you would do Sanshou. So what happened was you weren't really training like a fighter. You weren't training like a fighter. So when we ended up going to the Muay Thai division, I would ask them like, so how many times do you guys train like for fighting a week? And they would look at me like, what are you talking about? Like, this is all we do, man. You know? So that was for me like, wow. Like that was the eye opener. And I just saw that there was more fights. And I believe Jenna was at that tournament. That was the first time I saw Jenna Castillo. She was like killing it on the pads, and everyone was like, who the hell is this girl? You know? Yeah. And I think one of your old guys, Duncan Duffin, what was it? I think
Duncan. Yep.
Yeah. So he was on there too, man, but,
me back.
Yeah. So tell us how you started, I guess, with Sanshou, and then, you know,
I mean, it goes back a long way. I mean, I started with traditional Kung Fu back in 1980 something or other. Mm-hmm. I tell the story a lot. I was one of the first groups of Americans to go travel to China. It was 1986. Mm-hmm. And we trained for a month with the Beijing Wushu team. It was an amazing experience. I was 13 years old. I was heavily ingrained into martial arts as a kid. I started in what is Wallum Kung Fu. Actually, I know they have a Wallum down in Florida.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we started doing Wushu after that. So went to China in 1986. I mean, it was a different world of China. It was an amazing experience. We got to train in the Forbidden City every morning, and the Beijing Wushu team every afternoon. Then came back, and about 6 months later, I got injured. Puberty kicked in, and I quit martial arts for about 10, 12 years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, life brought me back around to it. Something, I was missing something in life. I was not happy letting that energy go into negative directions. I'm like, what's going on? So I went back to my old Kung Fu school, and I went to, his name's Yao Li. He had a Kalu program, and then Jason Yi, from Boston Sanshou, had Sanshou. So I'm like, I started back with Yao, but I kept on peeking in another room. Like, what's they're fighting in there, you know? And I grew up in inner city. I you know, I've had my share of street fights, and I'm like, I was kind of needing to burn off a lot of negative energy. And I kept on, you know, training was nice, but punching someone in the face felt a lot better. actually getting punched in the face didn't feel too bad either, right? So then I started training. I was like, that's what I want to do. And I remember the first time I went to spar with Jason Yee's fighters. I felt like I did pretty well against him. Then he's like, all right, time to go with me. The dude proceeded to put me down like three times with like a wheel kick. And last time he's like, get up. I don't let my fighters go out like that. I got up, got my ass beat a little bit more, and came back the next day. Loved it. And then that was it. And I was like full time on from Sanshou for then. That was back when we were doing tournaments, right? And U.S. Nationals. So I had a couple of basic fights against guys who probably did Wing Chun or something or other, like pulled them off the Talu mat. Yeah. And then I actually won the first Nationals, and it just gave me confidence. And I'm like, this is a life I want to live. Mm-hmm. And I kept pushing from there.
Oh, all right. Cool. Very nice.
How'd you end up into the Bay Area?
Well, so after, and we'll probably come back, after the 1997 IWF World Championships, we fought in Italy, and I got back, and I had done pretty well. I had got to the quarterfinals and lost on like 1 point to the previous world champion from Ukraine. And I got back to Boston, and I'm like, man, it doesn't seem like there's much left for me to do here. There wasn't much of an outlet. I'm like, unless I just keep trying to focus on going back to the World Championships, which I want, which I did. But I was like, I felt like I was only going to grow to a certain level in Boston at that time. At that time, there were no fight gyms there, really, probably boxing only. So I'd been to California right before I started fighting. My best friend and I did a road trip, drove across country and went out to California. It was like, wow, so it's warm out here, huh? and that was pretty much a decision. Like, okay, I could have to, you know, trudge through the snow every day to the gym, or I could ride a bike to the gym. So, long story short, I ended up in Vancouver, British Columbia for a certain amount of time, training more traditional martial arts with Liang Shiyu. But I needed to fight, and I called up Kung Lee, and we had been on opposite teams at that point, but we had shared being on a U.S. team together. And I went down there. He got me my first pro fight and never looked back.
Nice. Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. Because, I mean, it's cool to hear that story because, yeah, like it goes to all the kung fu and everything that I used to do as well. And then I remember the same thing. I just got into this. I don't know if you remember, but also they used to do those like continuous sparring where it wasn't really like.
Yeah,
you know, it was
not real sparring.
Yeah, not real sparring. It was kind of like slap boxing, and while you were wearing like a kung fu uniform, but and then so I kind of wanted to go a little bit harder. And I remember a couple guys from my gym, and I would remember my Sifu at that time mentioning, he would be mentioning guys like Jason Yee, and then he mentioned Kung, and then a friend of mine got his hands on that video that I still don't know the name of, but it was. It was like a documentary about Kung or like him training or whatever, getting ready.
It had to be a Making of a Champion.
Yeah, Making of a Champion. That's what it was. Now, and you know, I remember seeing him, and you were in that video as well. So I just got hooked on it, and I was like, they were saying that they were doing it, and in my gym, and I decided to start, you know, dabbling in Sanxiao. But it was a lot of dabbling, you know, like they didn't train it all the time. So
yep.
So after a while, and then after, like I said, after getting my ass kicked, I decided to do a little bit more focus on it. And at that time, it was like my Sanxiao gym didn't want to focus too much on just Sanxiao, you know. So
yeah.
I was like, if I just want to fight, then I'm going to have to do something else. And I ended up going to Muay Thai. And I kept it for a while, you know.
Long story short, you probably know how the Chinese operate. After we decided to transition and do Muay Thai as well as Sanxiao.
Oh, they were not having that.
To the Sanxiao
anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, good Lord. I mean, there's politics. We find politics in every aspect of combat sports, right? Yeah. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know, it was a different time back then. I mean, honestly, those tournaments were real beneficial, I thought, to me. I mean, I fought a lot of guys who were probably better than me, but I wanted it more. But I also fought a lot of guys that were not very good at all. You know, like they were trying to translate their traditional kung fu into a combat. And so it gave me experience. You know, I was able to rack up 20 amateur fights in 2 years because of the tournament format, where, you know, now that's pretty difficult to do if you're just doing on a single, you know, bout ring basis. So, you know, I appreciate those days, even though it was late 90s and early 2000, but it seems like it could have been the 70s the way those things were run.
Oh yeah, for sure. For sure. So what ended up, so you were saying, I mean, I remember you were on the circuit, you were on Strikeforce when it was doing kickboxing. And then, you know, obviously Kung moved into mixed martial arts, and you were telling us a little bit off air that you were going to do the same thing, and things didn't exactly go the way you wanted. I mean, tell us a little bit about that, how that ended up happening.
Yeah, well, you know, the whole time, you know, what I enjoy about Sanxiao was, you know, it's called free fighting, right? And, you know, you could take bits and pieces from different styles of combat and apply them if it made sense to you, right? Where, you know, some traditional, even traditional Muay Thai gyms, they have a certain rhythm the way they do it, right? And you can tell all those fighters are from that certain gym, from their rhythm, right? And so one thing Sanxiao allowed me to do was, you know, again, take bits and pieces. So what I started doing is getting my hands on K1 DVDs. Actually, wasn't even DVDs by that time. It was, you know, VHS cassettes back then. So I started studying, Ernesto Hoost and, yeah. the whole onslaught of K1. I'm like, I just want to apply that striking to my Sancho and just add in takedowns.
You know, just so you don't feel too old. I saw Making of a Champion on VHS, so that's fine.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I had to get all my whatever footage I had of my fights were all on VHS.
Yeah,
and I finally got it, converted to a highlight for a DVD, and I lost that since then, and it's on YouTube somewhere. But yeah, so I mean, I started off, with Jason Yee was very Chinese styled Sancho base, right? Like lead leg sidekick, cross, catches and sweeps, not a lot of, double legs or so forth. So then when I went to the World Championships in 97 and I saw how the Russians performed and all the former Soviet countries, and they essentially, had Muay Thai stand up with Greco-Roman and Sambo takedowns. I'm like, I want to adjust my style a little bit. There's a little bit more punishment involved with kicking someone's leg out. In fact, my rude awakening to that was my first fight was against Kazakhstan. And I remember being across the Muay Thai and I'm staring down the dude across from the Muay Thai. I'm just ice grilling him. And then walking behind about a foot taller than him up onto Muay Thai is my opponent. So I'm like, whoa, the guy had to be like 6'4" at my weight. And it was the first time I really experienced leg kicks and he kicked the shit out of my legs. I mean, I couldn't walk the next day. We were real fortunate to have a really good physical therapist on the staff at that time, Dr. Hannon. I mean, he's like a miracle worker. Got me to walk every day, but like every little kick after that was just punishing. So I walked away from that tournament like, that's a weapon I want to start really, really investing in. Mm-hmm. So I just started kicking a bag every day, 200,000 kicks a day, leg kicks. And then watching, like I said, K1, I started to implement more of a, the Dutch style, Thai style striking than the Chinese style.
Yeah.
And then I started a little bit of cross training with the Thai guys out here.
Okay. I wanted to ask you, cause we had trained with like Master Sean Liu, who we love to death. I mean, just crazy dude, but awesome.
Crazy, but yeah, exactly.
My favorite thing is that he walks around. I don't know what it's called. What the monk outfit?
Yeah, he's got his monk robes, but then he's wearing Timberlands.
It's called, but then that with his Tims with the laces untied and the that's my favorite part.
I always that Sean Liu's job growing up in the Shaolin Temple was to collect herbs, right? I always say that he probably jumped into the ginseng patch a few too many times because that guy's energy level is something to behold.
Oh yeah, yeah. So how? I mean, he ended up was he training Kung Lee or how was it working? Was he?
So he was essentially some guys in the former Sancho community might have some disagreements with him, but he was instrumental to Sancho in the United States.
Yeah.
He was a guy who was bringing international fighters over for us to compete with. So he was the ref or hosting one of the early tournaments and saw Kung and Kung performed super well. And, I think he started to take Kung under his wing and that just opened us up with, with working with him. Mm. He didn't work so much, obviously, just because placement, Kung being in California and Sean being in Mobile. But, he had a direct influence by bringing us competition. I mean, actually, my second tournament before the U.S. Nationals, he had a national division, which I won. And then the winners of national division, Yeehaw, got to fight a member of the Chinese military team.
Oh, yeah.
It was one of the most eye-opening experiences. I mean, everyone who fought against a Chinese guy leading up to my fight was either knocked out or actually knocked out and just bleeding everywhere. I fought my guy well. I mean, again, I'm fighting probably a semi-pro, and this is my third fight ever as an amateur.
Yeah.
But I fought well against him, and that's another point that gave me a lot of confidence that I could go far in the sport.
Yeah. No, and I think for our for everyone that's listening, that you know, these, it's kind of funny because I don't know, man. Like the level, like you, I mean, the Chinese still, that level that they have in Sanxiao, like they're pretty brutal, you know. And I think the, you know, and they're, I guess now it's transferring over to kickboxing and everything. With there's, you know, the Chinese that are fighting in these WLF tournaments and all that, but they're, you know, they're. There are hardcore fighters out there. Like, that's all they
for
do.
Sure.
Yeah, that's all they do. And I remember seeing it. And you know, just to let people know about Sean Liu, is Sean Liu is a legit, like, people talk a lot about the Shaolin monks and they don't know, like, you know, people are like, oh, is that real? And all that type of stuff. I mean, this dude was a legit Shaolin monk. And I remember him teaching us some of the takedowns, and his nickname was like Iron Leg or something, right? Because he, I remember he would just kick you and it was brutal. And this is like a, I mean, this was—he must have been like in his 50s or 60s, you know.
Who knows how old that guy is? Yeah. He looks the same now I did 20 years ago, and he probably was like 90 then. The thing with Sean was, whenever he would go over the rules at the tournaments, if you knew him, you backed away, because he's always gonna grab someone out the audience to demonstrate throws and what's legal and not legal. It was like a cartoon, like none of this and none of that, and like slapping people and taking him down brutally. I'm like, oh man, we're about to fight. You already beating us up.
Yeah,
he's a character.
No, he's totally a great guy, man. So tell me about, so after you, your career, like you're saying, you were going to go into MMA. I mean, because I wanted to talk a little bit about your transition to, and now that you're a gym owner, and I know, I know you obviously, because we've talked a lot, I guess, and I've seen you on similar threads and everything that has to do with Muay Thai. With the growth of Muay Thai now in the United States, really, with striking and everything, I mean, I think a lot of us that were in that Sanxiao world, a lot of us ended up coming over to Muay Thai. You know, and, you know, why do you feel that happened? I mean, I guess you can give us a little, you know, maybe some insight into how you felt it happened, like how it went from going from Sanxiao to MMA, like what Kung Lee did, and then, you know, just people jumping into the growth of now Muay Thai. And I'm pretty sure in your gym, I've seen you teach, you've had students that fight in Muay Thai tournaments.
Yeah.
So, you know, how did that all work for you?
So, you know, in the Bay Area, there were a lot of fight gyms, a lot of MMA gyms, not as many back then when I first moved, but a lot of Muay Thai gyms as well. So we did a lot of cross training, not training, but more, you know, going and sparring with different gyms. When the first year I moved out to the Bay Area in 99 is when we fought USA versus China, Art of War in Hawaii. And it was with that experience that I met the guys from Fairtex, Ganyao, Junksonon, and then Fairtex, because they somehow were put on the U.S. team, lucky for us. So it was, you know, it was the top Chinese fighters from every weight division and then the top fighters from the U.S., which, you know, at that time was essentially Kung Lee was really the only pro at that time. That was my second pro fight fighting on that. And then a couple of my old teammates from Boston and a couple of new teammates from San Jose stepped up and turned pro for that event. But again, we're fighting now. We're 1-2 pro fights against guys who probably have had 30 pro level fights, right? So everyone other than Kung Lee, Junksonon, and N Fairtex got their ass kicked that night. Well, I won't say I got my ass kicked. The experience level was evident, right? Mm-hmm. And I knew Kung's style and how that was able to win. But then I watching Junksonon and N again, like vicious leg kicks, pressure. For Fairtex, always had decent boxing for Muay Thai fighters. And they just, you know, they walked through their competition. So that was, and I remember Ganyao after the fight was like, hey, come to the Fairtex, I'll teach you how to kick in the head. I never took him up on the offer, but so that was kind of me starting to peek and look at the Thai style, right? And so, you know, fast forward to 2005, before we went on air, I was talking to you about how I had broken my arm a a year and a half before that, supposed to be my biggest fight against Pete Spratt. So I was off for a year and a half and finally was getting back in a game and fighting for Strikeforce. It was supposed to be Strikeforce's last kickboxing show. So I didn't know, you know, am I going to go? And the plan was to fight the last kickboxing show and do Sancho and then transition to MMA. But at the same time, I'm getting older. Even though I was maybe one of the more well-known Sancho fighters, the pay wasn't up to what you'd like it to be one of those well-known fighters. Kung was really on a different echelon when it came to that regards, right? So I'd also had plans open a gym. So all that being said, when MMA, I feel like MMA was part of the reason why Sancho didn't really take off. Just all the fighters that were wrestlers that would go into the sport of Sancho said MMA is even more suited to what I'm doing. And then obviously after the first season, the Ultimate Fighter popularity just blew up. So what are you going to choose, right? If you want to be a fighter, you know, you could choose maybe this form that, you know, not as many people know about, but was starting to get to a certain level, or you could jump on a bandwagon, or you could do this other sport, which is Muay Thai. And even in 2005, it didn't have as much coverage as we're getting now. Luckily we're getting it now. Mm-hmm. So to me, Sancho and Muay Thai are cousins. Just a little bit different emphasis when you're in the clinch, right? Mm-hmm. Sweeps are the same. Dumps are really the same. Just you can't do a double leg, you know, takedown in Muay Thai. But in Sancho, you couldn't throw elbows. So you just had to learn and put in time. Instead of putting the time into learning takedowns, I started putting time in learning the clinch. And, you know, luckily I had friends like Jung San and other gyms that were focused on Muay Thai that I could kind of steal stuff from.
Nice.
Yep.
Yeah, so now that the growth of Muay Thai, I mean, obviously, like you said, I think MMA, unfortunately, because, I mean, I like MMA, but I just don't follow it as much anymore, man. I'm such a diehard Muay Thai guy. Yeah.
Yep.
So, Vinny's the hater of it here. But, you know, it's just, and I understand, like, with Sancho, and Sancho had that problem, like, where, like we were talking off air, you know, there was a lot of federation beef, and there's like a lot of traditional Chinese politics with a lot of these federations. And, you know, one guy didn't agree with another. So I remember even my, you know, like we were, like I was saying, like when we decided to go into Muay Thai and we would tell our coach, hey, we want to do a little bit more Muay Thai and also combine it with our Sancho. We don't really want to do this form stuff anymore. It was like, you know, like a slap in the face for him.
Yeah.
Being, you know, he was a very Americanized Chinese guy, but still very traditional in the Kung Fu. So it was kind of like, no, I don't want to do that. And kind of unceremoniously, like, get the hell out of my gym kind of thing. So it kind of happened. And I think that's what happened with Sancho is a lot of, it never grew to that point. Then you said, MMA did, and everyone just jumped on it. And I think everybody was on board in the beginning. Now it's kind of like, I think you wrote a post the other day where you felt it jumped the shark. I think for a lot of us it did, because I remember being hot into it when I was younger, man. But now that I've grown so much and when I went to Thailand and I fought Muay Thai and I came back, I became totally obsessed with it. And I'm really happy with kind of where it's going now. So,
yeah, I mean, it's we're starting to make some headway, right? Yeah. You know, really, to me, also with the downfall or kind of the demise of Sancho in the United States, you know, and I told these guys at the time, there were a lot of really talented fighters doing Sancho. They just didn't turn pro. They didn't help us take it to the next level.
Yeah.
It was Kung and me, and then we would try to push these other guys, and they would have 50, 60 amateur fights. I'm like, man, just, you know, they're like, well, we're not going to fight as much. The only way to push a sport is to push it, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, luckily Kung was our ambassador, and I was training with him so I could be the other guy, right? There needed to be another guy, but there needed to be two other guys and three other guys and three other women, right? So there just weren't. We had really good quality Sancho gyms, but there were like 7, 10, right? Where Muay Thai comes from a longer line of tradition, right? So once the transition was made, and now there's more and more Thai gyms, and if you find the right people to help promote the sport, there's going to be more people to back it up, right? Mm.
We were actually those guys trying to push San Chow too, to be honest. When we first started this, before it was the striking corner, and before that it was Muay Thai's life, and before that it was Florida San Chow and Muay Thai.
Yeah, that's how we started it out.
Hell yeah.
Like, before that it was actually just Florida San Chow.
Yeah. Yep. Like, we started it out because it was just like, we really love this sport, let's get it going, do all this stuff. So we used to highlight just the team, like our Florida team, right? And then from there, it was like, all right, let's try to highlight all the San Chow fighters. But that never took off. And then we started doing Muay Thai.
Yep.
Let's try integrating Muay Thai because we still love our San Chow roots. And then it got to the point where it was just like, you know what, man? Muay Thai is where it is. And that's what we're doing more often now. Like, when was the last time we would look back and say, you know, when was the last time we actually did San Chow? You know, it was already years, you know? So,
I mean, what are you going to do? If you have a chance to, if you have a team of fighters mm-hmm. and they have a chance to fight, you know, 15 times a year doing Muay Thai or twice a year doing San Chow, what are you going to focus on, right? And really that, it dictated my direction, right? I mean, essentially MMA, you know, especially in California, the weird thing that happened in California, San Chow was never legalized in California. It was an amendment made to Muay Thai.
Yeah.
So when MMA finally got sanctioned in California, they wiped it. They killed San Chow in California. Oh. So it effectively just killed the sport, right? Yeah, they took it off. It wasn't legal anymore. Yeah. So it's like, okay, now if I want to, I like fighting.
Yeah.
You know, Muay Thai is really, really similar. And honestly, it was a little bit of a breath of fresh air to me because I got to be a student again. I mean, there was a progression of me learning Muay Thai and then translating to my fighters. First, I had to just learn how to use a knee as a strike, right? Mm-hmm. How to defend a knee as a strike. And it wasn't, again, like probably like you, wasn't really till I really went to Thailand and observed how they trained and was like, wow, there's like the clinch is a whole separate art. Unto the art of Muay Thai, right? I could spend just as much time learning the clinch as I do the rest of it. And that really just changed my perspective. And I really started to say, okay, I'm not just going to add these elements to how I already do striking. I'm going to learn the art of Muay Thai.
Yeah. And let me ask you a question, Rudy. I mean, you were, I mean, I remember seeing you and obviously Kong was known for his suplex and all this stuff. And I remember seeing you do it one time on a Lay Thai as well. So I want to ask you, I mean, because you know that you have your gym and you were telling us, you know, you're planning on opening, what, your fifth now or something like that?
Yep.
Just
opened fifth.
Yeah, which is awesome. So let me ask you, I mean, with the growth of Muay Thai and all this and having these, you know, fighters that fight in Muay Thai now, do you ever find yourself still, do you still teach San Chow stuff here and there to your guys?
There's little elements, especially, I mean, I also have MMA fighters too. Yeah. So, you know, to me, San Chow is perfectly suited as a striking art for MMA fighters, more so than Muay Thai, right? A lot of traditional Muay Thai camps, the weight is on the back leg. That's not very good for defending takedowns, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I implement the setups I used to use as striking setups for takedowns for San Chow as striking setups for my MMA fighters. For, you know, the Muay Thai, you know, it became a different thing, right? I mean, I have MMA fighters and we do it because I have guys who are good in the ground. I'm like, that's the route you should take. But the transition, it wasn't that hard, really. Again, it was like, okay, you know, I like fighting. This is another aspect I can learn and add to my fighters. But I'm not one person who tries to teach Muay Thai one way, right? Like I try to adapt what I've learned and what I teach to the fighter. Some of my fighters are pressure fighters. Some of my fighters are counter fighters. Some of my fighters are agile. Some of them plod forward. So, you know, if I can teach a couple of them a sidekick, you know, I'm going to incorporate that. You know, the issue, and I just had this discussion with one of my former teammates from Boston, Josh Bartholomew, about the sidekick. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a great weapon, but it's probably one of the most difficult kick to perfect, because there's a lot that goes on with it, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to spend a lot of time just on that one kick. And there's, you know, it can be great if you're good at it, but it can also put you out of position. It doesn't really allow you to set up other strikes that well. So what am I going to do? Am I going to spend, you know, 2/3 of my time developing one weapon, or am I going to try to make all around fighters? But I definitely still use some of my tricks that I did in Sancho, and I translate it depending on the fighter.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I remember that was the same thing, man. I mean, when I started fighting, I think I used, you know, one of my title fights down here was an amateur title, and I fought, I don't know, some guy cornered me in the clinch, and I was able to turn him or whatever and kind of push him out of the clinch. And then when he came at me, I was sort of like in a side stance, and I just threw the side kick, and it hit him perfectly in the stomach. And I was just like, oh, that was Sancho right there, you know? But
I mean, the great thing about it is that people aren't ready for that.
Yeah.
If they're not used to it and you pop it with a good side kick in the chest, their eyes get big, right?
Yeah.
And actually, my one K1 fight as a pro, I actually picked a dude up over my head. Everyone in the audience, like, no, don't. Yeah. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
I let him down gently. I was like, but it was just instinct at that time, for sure.
Yeah. My teammate did the same thing fighting that when I was telling you about the Mike Miles. The first time I fought Muay Thai was my friend's first time fighting Muay Thai as well. And, I think he got to a point where he fought actually one of the Smandich brothers. It was Trevor. It was either – it was one of them. I forgot which one it was. But it was a younger one, so I think it was Nate Smandich. So he ended up – he was fighting him, and Nate caught him with a couple good shots. And I think Mark just said – like, his name was Mark. And he's like, oh, he just said, fuck this. And he just went for the takedown, threw him over his head, and just slammed him. And then you know, they got real pissed and everything. And I was just like, dude, I don't know why you did that. But he was just,
awesome.
He was frustrated, man.
You know, we in the Bay Area, we used to have smokers. They're illegal now. You have to have a sanctioned in-house thing. Yeah. Smokers were super good in developing fighters, right?
Yeah.
And there's a few teams in the Bay Area that had Sancho, and we used to always go to Fairtex and have smokers. And a number of times the Sancho fighters would do the same thing, and we'd always get a chuckle out of it. They weren't too happy about it, though.
Yeah.
I actually loved the sidekick. That was one of my favorite things.
Yeah.
That was my first weapon. I mean, I was known for a long time for having a sidekick. It was a really – honestly, I blame Kung for changing that to me, because I tried to sidekick him, and I was, like, bouncing off backwards. And I had to spar him every day. I started using it less and less. He had a real good way of just like negating everything I did, especially the sidekick. So, you know, he actually helped me become a better counter fighter. Before I trained with him, I was really, really aggressive as an amateur. So I learned how to move pretty good training with him.
Yeah. But you know what, man? You know, something just popped in my mind. I mean, everything we've talked on this podcast a lot, where it used to be, and I think it still happens, but it's something that's kind of, I think it's getting better, where it used to be that there was so many different rule sets. So you would go to, you know, you would go to like ISK, you would fight for IKF, you would fight for all of these, and they had, you know, they had the American style kickboxing, the Oriental rules, the leg kick rules only, international. Like, everybody had their own version of what essentially was, I guess nowadays, what we would call K1, or K1 doesn't even exist anymore, really. So it's more like, are we fighting glory rules or whatever? But so there's K1 rule set, which is, you know, so all of these different rule sets essentially were causing problems with, you know, how, I guess, it's, and still kind of cause the problems with judging in the United States and the discrepancies that there are between one organization and another, and who should be judging. Should they have experience in kickboxing or Muay Thai, and know they're experienced judges in MMA or boxing? So I think in a way, although it sucks that Sancho's sort of gone, the kind of become non-existent, I think now that we're seeing sort of everything become streamlined,
It's helping.
It's
right?
helping.
It's
yeah.
helping them, especially the judges and the refs, right?
Yeah. That's
mostly what you're concerned as a coach. You know, I mean, I I go around and I look around. Who are my judges today? Oh, that's a boxing judge for sure. Well, that's an MMA judge, you know, and that gives me an idea of what I'm looking at and how they're going to score it. I get really happy if I see someone who's Thai or no, or I know who's, you know, been in the Muay Thai community. You know, that's been an issue for a while, even with Muay Thai, is just, you know, people's understanding of what Muay Thai is, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the main issues is it was that. And like I said, I think it had to do with many years of so many different rule sets being, I mean, even now with the IKF, I think they did away with their international rules, I think, on one of them. And now it's focusing on Muay Thai. You have the TBAs, which are totally focused on Muay Thai. Now with the IFMAs growing, or, you know, the USMF focusing on the IFMAs. I see the opportunity now, and especially, like, it kind of sucks. Like, I always say this, because, like, now that we're doing the podcast, Vinny and I, it's like, when we were fighting, we would have loved to have those options, and I'm pretty sure you would have as well. You know, have so many options for being able to continue your career. Now, fighters, I think, have a lot more of, you know, if they start out fighting, they can decide to go the MMA route. They can decide to stay in Muay Thai, even though Muay Thai is more of a labor of love now. Kickboxing is also more of a labor of love, but still is getting a little bit hotter, you know. But there's more of an opportunity there than when you were fighting, than when we were fighting.
They have tons of opportunities to fight. Where, you know, when I started, I had to pay my way to go travel to fight. I never once fought in Boston, which was my hometown. The closest I fought was New York. I mostly had to go out to California, New Orleans, or Florida to fight. Where, you know, now I can build a fighter from their first fight to their pros fighting locally, you know. So there's much more of an outlet, and, you know, it's there's still politics in the sport, but there's more of opportunity for now than ever for fighters to do Muay Thai.
So I guess to wrap up, Rudy, I mean, one thing that I wanted to ask you, and I guess, you know, this is something, because I always see you're definitely somebody involved in the game, has been involved in the game a long time. I see you comment. I've liked a lot of your comments on Facebook. We're in the same, you know, Muay Thai community. So with the growth of everything, you know, everything's growing, and we always say it's growing in a good direction. But like you said, there's still things left to iron out. And then, you know, recently I was listening to, you know, to Joe Rogan, and he had Liam Harrison and Vinny Shorman on the show. And it was really cool, because and Joe Rogan always asked this question, which is awesome to hear, that, you know, somebody like Joe, who has this such a reach, really talks a lot about Muay Thai and about why it's not getting bigger. Why does it not get bigger? I mean, you've been in the sport for a long time, especially coming from different disciplines, now teaching a variety of disciplines as well in your gyms. But, you know, you've seen the growth of Muay Thai. You know, what do you feel is the reason, like, in your opinion? I mean, you've been around a lot of fighters.
Yeah.
What's
I mean, I think the debate is going to be ongoing forever, right? You have a group that are like, well, Muay Thai is not growing because you're trying to water it down and make it, you know, acceptable for Americans.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, you're not going to get the average person sitting through a 2-minute, you know, Waikru Rumoy. It's a beautiful part of the art, but it's not going to translate to the masses.
Yeah.
Right. I think even in Thailand, they're starting to go to the 3-round format for non-title fights. I think to a certain degree that helps, right? Americans are brought up on, you know, on high intensity, and their attention spans are short. Right. So they want to see action. They want to see it now. And that's a big reason why MMA blew up, is because, you know, you put little 4-ounce gloves on someone and people are going to get knocked out pretty easily. Right. Mm-hmm. So you get that shot of adrenaline. So, you know, going around the 3-round fights is a good thing. I like a full 5-round fight. Mm-hmm. But if it helps promote the sport and more people are gonna get more fights and more action, and that's gonna bring more viewers, then I'm all for it, right? So, you know, that's the debate. It's like part of the Muay Thai community wants to keep it strict and traditional to its roots, and there's, you know, that's not wrong. And then the other part of the community is saying, well, we need to adapt it to the Western taste. And I think there's a fine line between that, right? If you say Muay Thai to someone who's never experienced it before, they think, you know, they think maybe it's some sort of food, right? But if you say, you know, even if people don't know what they know what the UFC is, but if you said, you know, extreme fighting or, you know, no holds barred fighting, as, you know, people talked about it early on, it piqued people's attention because they could relate to something about that, right?
Yeah.
So the trick to me is it's finding a way, and it only comes through the more people see it, right?
Yeah.
You know, finding a way to get to the masses. Now, if there are fighters in UFC that, you know, have a Muay Thai background, but if they promote themselves as that fighter, like, my art's Muay Thai and I'm going to use my Muay Thai skills to win. I mean, look like Joanna. I mean, how many times did she win IFMA? I mean,
yeah,
she could have been a great proponent for Muay Thai, even though she is, but to, like, really wear it on your chest, like, this is my art and this is what I'm going to use to dominate in mixed martial arts, would help as well. But I think with promotions on either side of the coast, you know, the more they can do just to promote the sport and promote the fighters more, even more than their promotion, helps, right? Because what people, and this is what UFC did very well, really, was the Ultimate Fighter, was getting people to identify with a person that's fighting, right?
Yeah.
If you watch an MMA fight and you don't know who they are, it's boring, right? And probably the same thing to a certain degree with even boxing or kickboxing or Muay Thai. But if you get to, if all of a sudden you're learning someone's personality and there's an attachment there, you're gonna follow them, and then that helps the sport grow. So
yeah.
I think that's a simplified way of saying it. You know, that we need more money, we need more promotions to pay fighters well, we need better judging, all across the boards. But we've made some strides here in the last, you know, 10 years.
Yeah, definitely. And I think with every podcast we do and everything we've talked about on a lot of different guys, a lot of different coaches, a lot of different fighters, I mean, they're all in the same, like, that it's moving in the right direction, but there's still some stuff left to do. And I think it's getting there. And like you said, but I used to be one of those people on that side of the community that would say, you know, if you don't do the Y Crew, if you don't have the music, if you don't do this, it's not Muay Thai. And then you start realizing that to even some of the Thais, that's not a big deal. They just want to get there and fight, you know? So,
yep. I mean, that's a conversation. I mean, I bring Junkson on up again. He's a good friend of mine.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's like, who cares? This, you know, what really translates is the fighter translating what you teach to them, right?
Yeah.
If they make you proud in the ring, that's what most matters. Now, I'll say this, you know, I used to, you know, the music used to drive me crazy. But, you know, when I went and coached IFMA in 2009, now it's hard for me to visualize Muay Thai without it. But I can, right? And if it's for the sport, if it's going to help us grow the sport, then I'm all for it, right? And I think, again, it's kind of, we have to find the balance, right? We have to promote the art, but when it comes to the sport, you need to make it a little bit more westernized in appearance, right? The way you promote it.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah, man. I definitely agree with all that. And I just wanted to say, you know, to wrap up here, Rudy, it's been a pleasure having you on. Like I said before, you know, I don't want to say I grew up watching you, because I know you feel old when I say that. But definitely, yeah, you were one of the guys that was one of the first fighters that I saw compete, you know, for, like, right in front of me. And that's why I got into Sanchow, which is essentially got me into Muay Thai. So it's really been great having you on. And, you know, I know one of your students told you that I've name dropped you a couple times on the podcast.
Yep.
So, I mean, that's why it's great to have you on. I know you've been doing, like you said, you've been doing this stuff for quite some time, and really have evolved with the sport. Just like the sport is evolving, you've had to evolve. And and I think only good things are going to happen from here, but it's a pleasure always listening to somebody who has experience.
I appreciate it. I appreciate, you know, if I can help lend a voice to our community and to our sport, I appreciate actually being an OG in a game too now, even though sometimes I'm like, I don't want to really be old, but it feels good to know that I can trace myself back and other fighters and other teams that I've known for, you know, 20 years now, and still see them, you know, in the game. And then, you know, it's great that so many other people care about it. And it's great to see people like you that have just like me that have translated, you know, from one art to the next. And we haven't kept, you know, we haven't let that spirit die in ourselves. We keep the passion for combat sports, whether it's Sancho or Muay Thai, even MMA. But thanks a lot for having me.
All right, man. Thank you very much. It was a pleasure talking
to
you.
Awesome, guys.
All right.
Take care.
Muay Thai Kuchivit.
All right, guys. So that was Rudy Ott out of Smash Gyms in the Bay Area. Like I said, really great guy. Somebody who we looked up to a lot when we were younger, especially me when I started Sanxiao. So it was really great to kind of reminisce about those Sanxiao days, and for some of you guys to get to know of this whole other combat sports world that existed before things have started to pick up, and it's kind of streamlined into Muay Thai and MMA, and we wanted to streamline a little bit more just into Muay Thai. So that's the goal here. But no, guys, I mean, that was awesome to have Rudy Ott, and we appreciate him coming on. And with that said, we are going to wind up here. Remember, you guys can catch us on our main website, which is strikingcorner.com. Also, of course, really, with everything that's been going on with Facebook and all this, you know, all the things that's going on with them, really, the one that we really throw all our weight behind is Instagram. Both Vinny and I are available on Instagram, but we also have our Striking Corner Instagram page, which is the one that's most active and the one we post to the most. That's at Striking Corner. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/Striking Corner, at Striking Corner, and also on Twitter, at Striking Corner as well. And I am... What?
Fuck Twitter. It's useless. Twitter anyway.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people still use Twitter, bro. with that said, you guys can also follow me, Eric Rivera_TSC. And Vinny, how can they get in touch with you?
At Vinny Scotto.
At Vinny Scotto, S-I-M-T. All right, guys. Oh, no. Oh, at Vinny Scotto. No,
yeah. S-I-M-T, not there anymore.
Yeah. But mentioning S-I-M-T, Staten Island Muay Thai is Vinny's gym. You can check that out at Staten Island Muay Thai if you're interested. If you're ever in the Staten Island area, just head out there. He's a decent guy. As for me, you can catch me, if you're ever in Florida, in the Pembroke Pines area, we're near Fort Lauderdale, it's Pines Muay Thai. Check us out, pinesmuaythai.com.
Nobody wants to see me.
Dude, they love me. All right, guys. Yeah, so that's it, for this edition of the podcast. Vinny's in the background talking shit. I can't really hear him, but anyway. That's it, guys, and we'll be back in another 2 weeks with another episode of the Striking Corner podcast. Thank you, as always, for listening. Oh, and before we go, please, if you get a chance, please leave us a rating and comment on iTunes, which helps us, you know, basically.
I have to say this at the beginning because half the people who listen are already gone.
Yeah, that's true. But if you are here still, thank you for listening, and please leave a rating and comment. That's it. Bye.
Bye, guys.
You've been listening to The Striking Corner with Eric Rivera and Vinny Scotto, your source for Muay Thai and kickboxing news worldwide.